thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And you can always contact us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. I'd love to hear from you with your comments, suggestions, things you like, things you love, things you don't like, things you'd like to learn more about. And of course, we love to see you in person. And in person can mean that you come along with myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone, on our many outings in the field. And we have many coming up now for the new year here, 2017. Wow, we're all the way into almost the, and getting to the middle of March already. Unbelievable. We have classes in Chinatown Herb Walks. We have a Chinatown Herb Walk coming up April 30th in Manhattan. There's also a Naval Expo, that's N-A-V-E-L, Expo.com, and that's going to be the first weekend in May. Wonderful speakers, many of whom you've heard right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z as our guest. And then we have Herb Walks at Restoration Farm, which is a beautiful, really biodynamic farm on Long Island, and we're going to have one walk in June where we go out and identify edible and medicinal plants for a few hours, and then we're going to have a full day workshop where we go out in the field, gather the plants, and make them into medicine on this incredible, huge, beautiful biodynamic farm. So you may want to get in touch about that. We're also having a trip to the island of Jamaica where we actually live with shamanic healers for a week. And by the way, that trip is closed out. It's coming up this week. So if you're at all interested, you can look into it. And we actually are taking registrations now for next year because that trip has been closing out every year. And then we have so many online classes. For those of you who are not by our Connecticut, we have Connecticut walks, we have Long Island, New York walks, and then we have a lot of stuff in Florida. So if you're not locally in one of those areas, you can actually fly us in to do a workshop, and many people have all over the country. Or what's so exciting nowadays is you can join us online. On March 14th, which is coming up very soon, I think this week, coming week, we do have an online class which will focus on scientific validation of botanical medicine. And that class is available online. Also, it carries CE credits for nurses, midwives, dietitians, acupuncturists, and massage therapists. So if you're any of those and need CE credits, you actually can get them by joining us for that class online and for many, many of our online classes. And if you are not a professional with a license, you can take the class and then you will get a certificate instead of CE credits. You would get a nice certificate saying that you attended the class. So join us. Join us anyway. Join us online. Join us with your body. Join us with your mind. Join us with your ears. Join us with your soul. We love to connect with you. And today we have a very special guest. And her name is Mary Beth White. And Mary Beth is an RN. She has a master's degree. She's a nurse practitioner. And she's an NCBC and also is a registered nurse in advanced practice with more than 30 years experience as a nurse practitioner. She has a primary area of expertise in women's health, gynecology, and is also an adult nurse practitioner, nurse colposcopist, and is nationally certified as an advanced practice holistic nurse and nurse coach by the American Holistic Nurses Association. She is a faculty member of the Huntington Meditation and Imagery Center, where she assists in the development of other healthcare practitioners choosing to become transpersonal coaches. In addition, she has a private practice as a cranial sacral therapist and transpersonal nurse coach. So she has been involved in all kinds of areas of study and expertise for many years. Our topic for today is actually called, it's a hot topic, hope you're ready, take off your sweater, because this is about sexual seniors. And Mary Beth's expertise in that area goes back to the early 90s, where she completed a fellowship as an HIV clinical scholar through the AIDS Institute of the New York State Department of Health and the State University Hospital at Stony Brook, and has been a hospice nurse. If you want to find out more about her, as always, we're going to have links at the end when you look online. But it's Well Karen, so it's WellCarin.com. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Mary Beth.
Thank you, dear Ellen. This is really an honor and a treat. And for those of you that have any interest, I would highly recommend considering the Chinatown tour. I did it a couple years back with Ellen and Dr. Z, and it was just such a treat to be with such wise teachers who are very grounded and down-to-earth and knowledgeable. And we shared a fun day together walking around Chinatown and opening us doors for me that I had no idea existed.
Well, that's what friends are for, right? Learning from each other. And so, just so you know, listeners, we're going to go back in time a little bit right now with Mary Beth, because Mary Beth, how did you get into this field of nursing and then ultimately become a nurse practitioner and so highly qualified in so many specific areas of expertise?
It actually went back to my childhood. I remember very early on being given a nurse's watch when I was young. I was the oldest of six children. I am the oldest of six children, and was a caretaker for many family members when they became ill, and that happened frequently. I also had a life-threatening illness, an ovarian tumor, when I was 6 years old, and had many interactions with the healthcare system. And so that was a lens that I was familiar with, and I decided to pursue it further. I did my bachelor's in nursing at Delphi University on Long Island in New York. And at that point, it was in the early part of, well, not the early part. It was in a active part of the women's movement. And I was very interested in changing the paradigm of what was available for women. And so that was my entry into it. My first job I took as a labor and delivery nurse in New Jersey, and continued to know that this was an area that I was attracted to. And I also knew of the importance of understanding the mind-body connectedness and mind, body, and spirit. And that continued to lead me in understanding it both personally and professionally for myself and for my clients, and led to my development into other areas. My interest in craniosacral was based on an experience I had when I was in my 20s. I was seeing a chiropractor for neck pain, and she started studying with Dr. Upledger. And I benefited because she was spending more time with me and practicing her newfound techniques of craniosacral on my neck, and she actually did some mouth work, which hurt but made a huge difference. And that was really the turning point. And about 8 or 9 years ago, when I was looking to enhance my toolbox, my skill set, I found a school of craniosacral therapy based in NIAC, the Great River Craniosacral Therapy Institute, and have not looked back. It was a wonderful and continues to be a wonderful connection that I have with my teacher, Dr. Ron Wish, and I continue to go there and study with him and learn more about these practices, which I know as a nurse practitioner, when I'm seeing people in my busy practice, I have a limited amount of time, and I can not. I work in a conventional GYN practice and do my best to bring in as much holistic and integrative approaches as I can in a limited time span. However, I know that it's not enough, so I began to expand and offer things privately.
Well, thank you for going back in that beautiful history. It's so interesting because I do ask every guest that. And in terms of the childhood experiences, such as you being one of six children and called upon to be a caregiver, and you sort of evolved with natural desires, or maybe you were forced into it, I don't know, but it was part of your early experience, and then also having been a patient yourself. So often caregivers have those things in common, both an early proclivity and an experience in medicine because they had a health challenge. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now, I want to tell our listeners, as a sort of an interesting lead into our topic for today, that you're actually visiting me at my home. And I live in an adult community. And as we went around last night in the adult community, I was telling Mary Beth about the many things that go on here, just on a social level. And even though it's an adult community, which is 55 and over, there is a lot of dating and, you know, all kinds of sex and all kinds of jealous fights where, you know, some woman went out with some guy and then she sees his car the next day at some other woman's apartment complex. There's really a lot of that going on. It's funny, but it's true. So we started having a more serious professional discussion about it, and Mary Beth was sharing with me how important it is to take this really seriously, because actually, with our topic today of sexual seniors, there has been a tremendous growth in STDs, sexually transmitted disease. I don't know how long it's been around, but it's been really well documented. So I wanted to share that information with you about what's going on, what's real, what you can do about it, and Mary Beth's suggestions as a professional. So what is the issue with that? I mean, I'm sure a lot of seniors don't even think about sexually transmitted disease. That's something for teenagers to worry about.
That's true, and that's the problem. And there are many facets to this. From a statistic point of view, the STD rates or STI, sexually transmitted infections, rates among people over the age of 65 are rising. The rates of between 2007 and 2011, the rates of chlamydia increased 31%. Syphilis cases rose 52%. Although the providers are often overlooking this factor, I make it a point in each of my visits to address sexual health and to ask about sexual concerns, but also risk factors. And I test people and I find stuff. If the provider is not on page and understanding the importance of looking for infections, they're going to overlook it. And then that leads to a wider range of problems where infections are diagnosed a lot later on in the disease.
So wait, let me interrupt you here, Mary Beth. When someone comes in, and maybe man or woman, but of course in your case, clinically it's going to be a woman since that's the focus of your practice for the most part, and they're of a certain age, would you bring up testing for these diseases, or would they be embarrassed if you bring it up?
They may be embarrassed. However, I will phrase it that this is a question that I ask everybody, and so I will use it as an opportunity to ask questions about their sexuality. I often say, like, how's your vagina? What's going on? Are you active? Are you not active? Are you in a long-term relationship, not a long-term relationship? if you have concerns about the possibility of infections or concerns about the fidelity of your partner, that's a huge issue that I address frequently, women coming in, finding out that their husband or their long-term partner has been with someone else and they're coming in to get tested and screened. And as women and men age, there's still a lot of sexual activity that's going on. There's a New England Journal of Medicine article that documents that the rising number of, or maybe not rising, but the increased, to document that many older adults are still sexually active. Women may be less likely than men to have an intimate relationship at some point. However, sexual problems are frequent amongst both adults, and they're infrequently discussed with their provider.
Has there been a change since you're talking about that and bringing up men as well? Has there been a change in this picture that's been documented or that perhaps you just know or have noticed in terms of since Viagra came out?
Viagra and Cialis have definitely impacted this issue. I remember when Viagra first came out and I had a woman come to see me, and they had not had, who was the partner of this man, and they had not had any penetrative sex for a long time. And she came in and she was lacerated. Her vagina was not able to accept an erect penis, and he was like a battering ram. She needed sutures. The article in the New England Journal of Medicine found, and this is back in 2007, that 14% of men were getting erectile dysfunction drugs. However, at this point, I would imagine that it's a lot larger number of men. There's also more divorce, more dating, the availability of online dating, which lowers the chance that someone knows really the person, their sexual history or their personal history well. And the lack of perception, the younger generation has been indoctrinated in the reality of sexually transmitted infections, and they know that they are to use condoms. And older adults missed that education piece, and it's not been brought up as an issue for them. And so definitely, Ellen, yes, the availability of Cialis and Viagra have been a factor. If a woman is considering resuming sexual activity, an older woman, 50-plus, postmenopausal, I would assess to see whether she is ready to resume an activity without doing some kind of what I call vaginal rehab to improve the ability to become intimate sexually with penile penetration.
But and also socially, I think there's been a pretty big change and a lot more activity in terms of seeking out relationships, and that would be sexual relationships, also getting back into things like one-night stands, even in a community like this, you know, just for, you know, a real teenage, going back to teenage mentality, thinking, oh, now, you know, all those things are behind us. Of course, pregnancy not being a threat is huge.
Correct.
It opens up a lot of doors to experimentation and having fun, especially when people are single. And they don't even think about the possibility of this massive rise in STDs.
Yes. It's definitely a red flag. It's got the CDC's attention. And it is really important to have educational programs. There's even a need for educational programs of nursing home staff because relationships develop in nursing homes as well. And they're not, that's completely beyond the scope of their radar, or assisted living facilities. So it is a lapse, a cultural lapse, on the part of the healthcare practitioners that is not taking into account the real reality, lived reality of younger seniors, more active and vibrant and living in communities where they have access to, easy access to new partners. And there's a lot more women than there are men. So men are more likely to have multiple partners or and the women are may not have the skill set to insist on condoms or for other forms of mutual sexual satisfaction that put them less at risk.
That's just so amazing. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are blown away, but the statistics are there. Well, we're going to just take a little short break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we'll listen to a natural medicine chest. When we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with nurse practitioner Mary Beth White with our topic for today, sexual seniors. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
Oh.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Give us a hello on Facebook. Go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, Ellen Kamai, or naturalnurse.com. You can click on contact. If you go to naturalnurse.com, you can click on products and then books, and you'll see the many, many books that myself and Dr. Eugene Samperone have written together, such as The Natural Medicine Chest, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, an appropriate book for today's topic, Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, Supplements for Pain, Virility and Vitality, Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, just gave a online webinar about that last week. So all kinds of information. Also, all our radio shows, like today's show, is archived on our site if you go to media and then radio shows. We have hundreds of radio shows archived there, and they're also searchable by a topic, like if you're interested in thyroid health or any particular disease process, you'll get a lot of radio shows with experts sharing information, and all of that is free at naturalnurse.com. Today, we certainly have an expert as well, our guest, Mary Beth White, and she is a registered nurse in advanced practice with more than 30 years' experience as a nurse practitioner. She also has certifications in other areas of health and wellness. For instance, she's a faculty member of the Huntington Meditation and Imagery Center, and also is a craniosacral therapist and transpersonal nurse coach. So you'd be hard-pressed to find someone with this level of expertise. Even in the early 90s, she completed a fellowship as an HIV clinical scholar through the AIDS Institute of the New York State Department of Health and the State University Hospital at Stony Brook. And so she has a real level and deep understanding of our topic for today, which is sexual seniors. I'd also like to throw out that our natural medicine chest coincidentally discussed jojoba oil. That's J-O-J-O-B-A, jojoba oil. And, you know, jojoba oil is an excellent sexual lubricant. We were talking about it being an engine lubricant, which it is. And not only is jojoba oil great as a sexual lubricant, you can buy it in any health food store, it's also antimicrobial. So that could be helpful in terms of, you know, a little bit of extra protection besides the condoms in terms of the possibility of the transference of a sexually transmitted disease. And our topic for today is about the fact that seniors in particular don't have the awareness of how prolific sexually transmitted diseases are in that age group. So we're going back now to Mary Beth White. Welcome once again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ellen.
So why don't we talk about, you know, you say let's test, and even off air you shared with me specific examples of women that you tested and found a, you know, different range of sexually transmitted diseases that you actually can get either as a young person and then it sort of comes back again and again and no one's testing you anymore because you're older, or a newly transmitted infection because of the sexual activity that's going on in our seniors these days.
Yes. And first I'd like to just backtrack a little bit and say that it's really important to know that if somebody is using a latex condom, never use an oil as a lubricant because oils can destroy the latex and it can break.
So what would they use?
A water-based lubricant is important if you're using a latex condom. If you're using a polyurethane condom, it's okay to use oils, but not with latex.
Great point.
So back to your question, Ellen. When someone comes in, many times people come in thinking that they have yeast infections. Many women come in, they're itchy, they're irritated, and it is our job as clinicians to go through the differential of what it possibly could be and come up with an accurate diagnosis. And that's a variety of questioning, because often there are significant clues in someone's history, if a great history is taken, a complete history, as to what might be going on, and that's important to ask about sexual activities. If you don't ask, you're not going to have that piece of information. Also, the examination, and I include in my exam, I do vaginal microscopy, so I frequently take a sample of the vaginal discharge and look at it live under a microscope and get a lot of information there. I can find things like trichomoniasis. I can see yeast. I can see a very common disorder that's not really an infection, but it's called bacterial vaginosis. Bacterial vaginosis is more like an imbalance in the ecology of the vagina. And with bacterial vaginosis, women may have an increase in discharge and sometimes a fishy odor. And the odor is more likely to be noted at times where the pH balance is disrupted by the introduction of more basic fluids. So, example, after intercourse, where if there's ejaculation inside, that will cause what's called an amine burst, where there's an odor, a fishy odor that's noted. So women will sometimes come in saying that they notice that after having had intercourse. And while it's not something that partners usually need treatment for, it does make a woman less able to protect herself against a sexually transmitted infection if she were to be exposed to it. So it's important to look for that and to treat it. Trichomoniasis is frequently not undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for a long time because it's not one of the routine screens, and it can mimic a urinary tract infection with burning or frequency. It also can cause discharge changes that could be mistaken either as bacterial vaginosis or as a yeast infection, and the treatment is completely different.
But now those things that you just mentioned, are they necessarily transmitted, or can people just develop them on their own? Is that a catching thing from a man, or just it develops, like you said, because of an imbalance?
There's two answers to that.
Good.
Bacterial vaginosis can develop on its own, sometimes after antibiotics. Women who are postmenopausal are a little bit more susceptible to it, whereas trichomoniasis is a sexually transmitted infection, and so the partner needs treatment. And I've actually diagnosed it numerous times in women who have not had intercourse and not been sexually active for many years, and it can linger and just be a source of what people may experience, perceive as having a yeast infection. And unless a proper antibiotic is taken, it's just going to wax and wane. Chlamydia is the most common reportable sexually transmitted infection.
And would that, now I know some of these things, for instance, in a community like this, people might be newly widowed, often happens. So they've had, we're talking about a woman now, maybe had one sexual partner for really 50 years or more, and then
yeah.
Suddenly, you know, they're pretty vulnerable, they're lonely, and then they become involved in a new partner who you said might be seeing everybody else in the community as well, who knows. And a good thing would be for her, if she was going to initiate a new relationship, to insist on using a condom. That would
have
a good idea.
And to have a discussion about the someone's history of having infections And it, when they've been tested, I mean, sometimes people say they've been tested and they haven't been tested, or the testing is not complete. Like for men, it's really hard to find trichomoniasis, where it's there are tests that are available to find it on women, a little easier than on men. But if she has it and she's been with him, he needs treatment as well, or she's just going to get it back. Yeah, it's a really awkward, difficult time, and it also is a way to get information and to get a sense of who is this person that you're about to be intimate with. Is this somebody that you really want to be intimate with? If when you bring up the topic of either STD testing or condom use, if they want to run, ideally it's best to have these kind of conversations before things get hot and heavy. Like if you know like things are moving in a direction and it looks like you're going to be intimate with this person, it's much better to have when you're not in the bedroom and things are moving fast.
So be aware. Now, it's interesting that you shared with me too, Mary Beth, that the figures are there, the government statistics are there. This is not maybe, we don't know. This is that sexual seniors are causing a big, giant rise in the issue of sexually transmitted diseases. Not if, it's for sure.
Correct.
And you even shared with me, it's so well known that it's influenced insurance company policies to where Medicare actually pays for these screening tests.
Medicare started covering annual STD screenings in 2011. But as of 2015, only 5% of seniors on Medicare are taking advantage of the free testing, and I'm not sure if many. What's that dynamic? Is it also the lack of awareness of the people that they're seeing that they're not bringing it up? As
well, you said even your own colleagues sometimes still are poo-pooing it, even. Or saying it doesn't matter when you're old or something like that, even in the face of this strong data.
Correct. In 2014, people ages 50 and over accounted for 17% of the HIV diagnoses in the U.S. And in that, in people over 50, the largest age category was 50 to 54 years old. They accounted for 44%. There's also ethnic disparities in that blacks and African Americans have a higher rate. At that point, it was 43% of all people age 50 and over, and whites were 37%, and Hispanic Latinos 16%. The scary part is that people 55 and older, when they're if they're HIV infected, they are less likely to be diagnosed early. They tend to, when they're found to have HIV, also have AIDS, which is when the infection has done a lot of very serious damage to the immune system. In 2014, 40% of people aged 55 or older who got an HIV diagnosis already had AIDS because their symptoms are often not really, they may be attributed to other illnesses that the person has, or there's, somebody might put it off as a side effect of aging.
And the doctors, we have to blame the doctors a little bit, because shouldn't this be across the board so then nobody's embarrassed? You don't have to bring it up. It's like you do. You go, this is what I do. And actually, I saw a TV commercial just the other day, but it was with a younger person, where the doctor has said, okay, well, let's do an HIV test, and the guy was kind of standoffish. It was a young man, not seniors. And she said, oh, no, you know, not that I'm saying anything about you, but just we do this for everybody. And that should be done.
Yes, to decrease the stigma. It should be part of routine annual screening.
Definitely. Now, what are some of the other specific ones? Like one person I know actually wound up getting chlamydia and also gonorrhea. And so what would make you suspect that something might be going on? Or if you have any new activity in particular before you get a symptom, wouldn't it be good to get screened?
Correct. The standard of care is that if anybody is 26 and under and they're sexually active, or 25 and under and they're sexually active, they're supposed to be automatically screened annually. And then after that, it's based on risk. And risk is somebody who has symptoms of infection, and that's wide. That could include yeast infections, or somebody who has a new partner, or their partner has multiple partners. So unless you ask those questions, you're not going to know who needs to be screened. And the testing is good. It's available, and it is underutilized, especially in the senior communities.
Right, and that has to change. Well, we're going to go to another break right here, and you're going to get to hear about other shows here on Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.FM. I am a big fan of this station, as well as, of course, a participant since its initiation. Gary Null actually invited us to do this show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and this is Gary Null's network. There's so many wonderful progressive shows right here. And, of course, if you can't listen in all day long, it doesn't matter if a particular time is convenient to you or not, because we have the phone archive as well. If you'd like to listen to the last five shows anytime just by calling in, you can call in for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z at 701-719-0884. That's 701-719-0884. You can always go to the website prn.fm, and they do list the numbers to the shows. And, of course, you can visit the archives anytime also at naturalnurse.com. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Tune in to The Living Well Show, which will air on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN, where we will offer the latest insights on natural health care, environmental issues, and all of the other circumstances that help us live well and be well. Join us. We are airing on Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. on PRN.
Let's go into the mountains. We'll leave it all behind.
This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders, to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones, and to gain fresh, new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
The Natural Nurse. So happy to join you today with my guest, Mary Beth White, nurse practitioner, RN, advanced practice nurse, also member of the Huntington Meditation and Imagery Center, and also a cranial sacral therapist and transpersonal nurse coach. She has a beautiful professional clinic that she works out of in Huntington, Long Island, and there's a second location not far from Huntington. I guess that's in Northport. Is that Northport, Mary?
East Northport.
East Northport. And we're talking today about sexual seniors. The fact that, you know, the flame doesn't go out as you get older, it seems. It's still rocking right here where I live in a community of elders that are very, very active on many levels. They're out there playing tennis. They're out there swimming. And they're out there having fun with partners of same sex, opposite sex, whatever's going on for them. It doesn't seem to, like, stop at 50 or 70 or 90, as a matter of fact. We really have a lot of fun here, so on many levels. So we were talking about the fact that there are changes, and Mary Beth did discuss the change in the dynamics because of Viagra, because so many men would lose sexual function even if they still had an interest. A very common saying was, the mind is still willing, but the body, you know, isn't. But now it is with Viagra. But yet, women have issues. And there's actually a syndrome called postmenopausal vagina, which can really be a problem. So why don't you share that with us, Mary Beth?
Yes, that's an issue that I deal with on a frequent basis. It's just not the same. As the hormone levels go down in women that are losing estrogen after menopause and not choosing to replace it in a variety of ways, the vagina can get, it thins. The tissue gets thinner, it's less stretchy, and it can be much more difficult to be active and have it be comfortable. And there's also a use-it-or-lose-it phenomena where women, either, if they choose because of a variety of reasons, which could be a change in libido, which has a whole, that's a whole other topic, that could make them choose not to be active, or because of pain or dryness or discomfort is a major reason for people choosing not to be active again, and that then causes another cycle where things tighten up. And so there are many techniques that can be used, products, either prescription or non-prescription, lubricants that can be helpful, massage techniques. There's also a wonderful field of pelvic floor physical therapists that are like gynecology physical therapists that, and luckily there's a growing number of them, women that are there, I haven't heard of a male doing this, but women physical therapists that do gynecological style exams and can address trigger points, that can look for muscular spasms, and use different techniques, including biofeedback. Sometimes women need women need to do courses of home treatment, exercises, and many involve the use of graduated dilators, starting out with a small dilator and getting to the larger sizes over time, and it's like any other physical therapy activity. It's not a quick fix. It takes dedication and persistence, yet with that, most people have results. And sometimes there are conditions that are not infections, that can be misdiagnosed as infections, skin conditions that need to be treated in a whole other way. So it's really important to have a good clinician who has a team or referrals that they can send you to get appropriately assessed and given appropriate treatment.
Well, the first step is to be able to recognize that there's a problem And, you know, something might change where, like you said, and we're talking about women here, might have been alone for many years, and now they really met someone that they feel is an interesting person. And this can be when you're older, and that it might lead to fun things in life. And even if their libido isn't that strong, maybe they want to be able to share on that level because they found someone who wants to, you know, share their life and do things with them. And they're really looking forward to this, but they find it hard to bring up to their healthcare provider. And I think that's where healthcare providers should be stepping in more, especially with the statistics that you shared with us about possible disease prevention with these older age adults. So it would be such a good time for them to bring that up. Now, what are some of the treatments? I mean, I would like to just run down a couple that are more natural, but really you have to always look at, I mean, if it's something like HIV, I really wouldn't suggest that people do only natural therapies. It's not strong enough, and it's a life-threatening illness. If it's something like, you know, lubrication issues, very often, like we talked about, using jojoba oil, vitamin E oil, things like that, almond oil put intravaginally can actually help to establish sort of more flexibility in the cells in that area. But it might be great to also use, and perhaps you prescribe, intravaginal estrogen creams, and they work faster. So perhaps use that, and you actually can use them together. They're not contraindicated if you understand how to do that. So what are some of the other, you know, drug therapies that you've seen helpful when STDs are an issue in younger people and especially for our seniors that we're talking about today?
For STDs, which do have serious side effects, serious problems related to them if they're left untreated, antibiotics really are important of both partners or both partners. If there's more than one person involved in this, it's not just two people, but there's other people involved. Everybody needs to be treated or else it's just going to continue to circle around. So I'm very supportive of antibiotics in the situation where somebody has chlamydia or gonorrhea. For herpes, there are good antiviral drugs that can be used safely by the majority of people and sometimes long-term. If somebody has recurrent outbreaks that are frequent, they may choose to take a daily dose of an antiviral specific for herpes, or if it's a once-in-a-while event, they can take the medication as the symptoms erupt.
I didn't know that. I thought when you go on those antivirals for herpes, particularly genital herpes, right?
People
can have herpes simplex. That's where you usually get once-in-a-while a cold sore on your lip. But genital herpes, you know, they test because they're actually different typings agents that when they're looking for herpes.
Herpes simplex type 1 is more commonly in the mouth. Herpes simplex type 2 is more commonly in the genital area. However, with oral and genital sex, you can get type 2 in the mouth, type 1 in the genital area. Type 1 tends to have a little bit of a less, is a little less aggressive, a little less recurrent in the genital area. And women often come in thinking they've just scratched themselves or they have like a little cut. There was some friction. And I have on numerous occasions tested it and found it to be herpes, either type 1 or type 2. And if it's just an annoying every once in a while thing, you can just take a few day course of an antiviral and be fine.
What about how catching it is if you are going to have a partner and someone does have outbreaks occasionally?
The first year after somebody's infected is a time where they have more virus in their body and they're more likely to have this thing called asymptomatic shedding, where they can shed it in the saliva, if it's in the mouth or in the secretions, genital secretions, at times where they don't have symptoms. And that
in enough quantity where it could cause transmission to somebody else. The other person who may be more likely to have the times where they're infectious and don't know it is somebody who gets recurrent infections. And if they get them a lot, they may then be the person that you might that might want to go on a daily dose of it to keep the virus down. It is important to share that with the partner. There's about close to 20% of the U.S. population is infected with genital herpes.
That's high. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah,
wow.
I think it's like 17%.
Well, all the more reason if you are with a partner and everybody's cool, like, stay faithful, you know, because who wants to go around sharing all that stuff? Wow, that's a really high number. Well, believe it or not, Mary Beth, we're coming towards the end of our time together, not you and I, because we're going to continue to party here in the senior center, but in terms of our time on the radio together. So what are some closing suggestions for our listening audience today?
I would suggest finding a healthcare provider that you feel comfortable with, that you feel listened by, that you feel safe in having these kinds of discussions, and being willing to switch to another provider if that's not going on, to be assertive about protecting yourself and honoring your body and taking care of yourself, and part of that involves having communications that can be awkward yet important and can begin to build a real relationship, and taking steps to protect yourself if you're choosing to have, especially if you're choosing to have multiple partners, by always using a condom and having the discussion, or choosing to not be with a person if you know that they're with multiple partners, because even a condom is not 100%.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, and you can find more about Mary Beth White, RNNP, at WellCairn, that's WellCairn.com, or contact us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Camite, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
PRN, PRN, PRN. Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.